What's up, peeps? Before you get into the episode, just a quick message. Did you know that Rebranded Safety is brought to you by RiskFluent? Rebranded Safety is essentially our campaign to achieve our purpose, which is to make the working world better by rebranding safety one interaction at a time. We value a people-centered approach that delivers positive impact on the risk. We deliver three types of services: technical, transformational, and fire. It's the last two I want to talk to you about. If you value what we value and you want some support driving a culture change or decluttering your safety systems, or you want to improve human performance, then it's our transformational support that can help you. Or maybe you want a highly experienced registered fire risk assessor to carry out an assessment on your building, design an emergency plan, or review the fire safety design for your new building, then it's our fire support service that can help you. But before you get in touch with us, it's important that you want to have impact on the actual risk and you value a people-centered approach. If you don't, that's fine. You'll find someone that can help you. But if you do value those, then get in touch with us at riskfluentltd.com or email me, james@riskfluentltd.com. But for now, I'll let you get into the episode.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranded Safety. Today we're talking to a lovely lady in our diversity mini-series. Let's get into the intro. I'll tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by RiskFluent. What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is the YouTube channel doing exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to change the perception of health and safety. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button and the bell and all of those magical algorithm thingamajigs. Just a quick shout out from our sponsors before we get into the caveat that comes with this diversity mini-series. Firstly, thank you very much to Paradigm Human Performance, the sponsors of our YouTube channel and podcast. Paradigm Human Performance's HSE subscription service is a perfect solution for those small, medium-sized enterprises. Those enterprises, those businesses that are spinning all the plates are actually RAMO. And sometimes safety falls by the wayside. But unfortunately, when that hits a proverbial fan, it can leave you up the creek without the paddle. Paradigm Human Performance have put together this subscription service to help guide you, be the guiding hand to make sure you're constantly there, constantly compliant, constantly improving. This is not your off-the-shelf compliance product. This is a solution designed by human and organizational performance experts, because that's what Paradigm are. So this is going to help you put worker safety at the DNA of what you do. It's going to help you utilize the experience, the subject matter expertise of that worker. And it's going to do that all whilst nailing down your industry regulatory compliance. So if you're nailed on, you're sure you want it, you can contact Paradigm via the email address or the phone number in the description below. But if you're still not sure, you go check out their website and check out the Learning Organization webinar. Okay, let's get into the diversity mini series. So as you know, this comes with a little bit of a caveat that me and my guests regularly are having open and honest conversations within this mini series. We have been in the last two episodes so far, and today is no different. In this mini series, we're trying to raise awareness around diversity within our profession. We're trying to increase diversity within our profession. I genuinely believe we need it. I think we desperately need it. We need some fresh ideas. We need fresh eyes. And we do that through bringing diversity within our profession. That only can be a good thing. And that is our aim here. So please understand that when we're having these conversations, because ultimately the conversations we're having are quite sensitive conversations. The subjects are quite sensitive and we're all really learning how to talk about this stuff. We're evolving and we're understanding how to talk about genders, how to talk about sexual preference, how to talk about race and so on and so forth. So please, if we say something in this that's maybe not quite modern enough, that's maybe not right on the nail, then please just feedback if you want to, but do it remembering that we are trying to do a good thing here. So today we're talking to Crystal Danbury. It's going to talk about loads of stuff around being a woman and her experiences as a woman in a very male-dominated industry in engineering. She tells all about her experience. I open up about some of my experiences as well. And we have a really open and honest conversation. Thank you, Crystal, for being so open with us. And thank you for coming on. I hope you all learn something from this conversation. So without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Crystal as part of this diversity mini series. Right, Crystal, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. Do you want to give us a quick introduction to yourself? And then we're going to just chat about you and your career, actually, which I think will be easy for you to talk about.
Yeah, amazing. So yeah, Crystal Danbury. I've worked in safety for nearly 20 years, and mainly in logistics, nuclear, rail, and telecoms. So just recently having gone into retail, but it's been a really good solid 20 years and I'd never do anything else.
That's interesting, actually, how you've gone from what someone would consider really high risk industry to what some would consider quite a low risk industry. That's quite interesting. What was your thought process around that? Or is it to position, or there's a lot of context around it? Or I'm just curious. You don't have to answer that question if you don't want to.
No, for me, I've always been governed by one question, and that is how many people are at risk in the organisation. And risk is, you know, there's varying degrees of risk, but how many people are there in the organisation and how many people can I help? And actually, the common vein through all of my role transitions has been bigger companies. Just started off working on one site that had 1,800 people. And 18 years later, I'm now looking after 200,000 people. That's the main thing for me, is how many people can I take care of, and where can I have the biggest impact?
Wow. So eventually, you're going to get to a point where inevitably you can only really be like the head of the United Nations or Parliament or something like that, because there is a cap to what you could do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's one of those things that I've never, ever had a career plan, ever. And I've always said, if I'm ever approached for roles, make sure it's something that I think is cool, something that really interests me and I find exciting. And that could either be the thing, the risk itself. So nuclear was probably the coolest thing I've ever done. Or actually the mind-boggling thought of looking after 200,000 people, all their own minds, all that can take a risk in any moment. I like that sort of going, yeah, how difficult that is. And I like that sort of continuous challenge. And I have no idea what I'm going to do in the future. Or where I'm going to end up. It'll just be if something comes along and it's cool and I feel like I can do more somewhere else than where I am. And right now I feel like the job that I've just transitioned into is definitely the best place where I can help the most people. So it's about the now, really.
You kind of nailed that value. So it makes decision-making much easier, I suspect, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Especially when I think the market can be quite saturated with job roles, and it makes it very easy to have quick conversations with recruitment agents when it's just like, well, you know, what's the key risk, how many people are in the business, and you get a feel really quick if an organization wants the role and it matters, or the organization just think it's a legal post, and the minute it's just a legal post, I am so not interested because my values are never going to align with theirs.
Oh, I could get into a whole conversation about that, but we'll end up, this is what I sometimes, this is what I really hate about my favorite type of podcast conversation, is where we don't plan it. We just have an intro chat. We like introduce ourselves and we talk about loads of shit. We're like, oh shit, we should have just recorded that. Like, that was such a good chat. Let's just try and recreate that again, like today. And then we press record and then it's like, oh shit. Now I've intended, so this conversation, like you know, I've intended to put this in the kind of diversity mini series, trying to promote diversity within our profession because it's kind of lacking.
Yeah.
But there's also something I'm really passionate about, which maybe is one and the same, but like recruitment in safety, just like for me, is just so archaic and so like I've had, and I know you talk to Anna a lot, but like I've had so many conversations with Anna and like back and forth over LinkedIn or WhatsApp and stuff, and I'm just like, right, we need to have a chat about this, because recruitment and safety is just like, oh, it infuriates me.
I fundamentally think it's a bit broken.
Yes.
And I had a family friend who had a boyfriend, and he worked for one of the quite a prestigious, very well-established safety recruitment agency. Very funny. He was like, I'm never going to tell anyone that I know you. But he said, they talk about you in the office all the time as the one they'd like to place. And wouldn't it be good if we could nab her for a place? And I said, well, what's the context around that?
Yeah, it was what all makes around. Crystal so special?
Exactly, right? So marketable because of my sex, which I find so disappointing. That the number one thing on your mind is that I'm female rather than I'm brilliant, because that's just insulting. And then the other one is the fee for placing me. It would be really good to get somebody at Crystal's level to place, because the fee is really good.
Oh, what a shame.
Your agency is so underwhelming, Ben. And if you're struggling to get people naturally migrating to you, it's because you're looking at the square peg and the square hole, and where can I fit that for the agenda at the moment? And then where can I make the most money? And you look left at the acres, the people having really authentic conversation about, but what do you really want from your leadership? And are you investing in their leadership? And do you care? And they're the ones that are changing up the game for me. So I've very, very often said, I don't really play with any other agencies rather than, you know, Anna and Acre. Because I know they're aligned to my value, which is they want to place good people and good businesses. So, yeah, just interesting insight.
And I suppose, I mean, you've actually created a beautiful segue there, which is my job. But I'm starting to find that the guests normally do it a lot better than I do. But, you know, that kind of tick box side of the way we look at diversity, and, you know, oh, I'd love to place you. Why? Well, one, because we get paid a shitload of money, but two, because she's a woman. And it's just like, that must be really hard to, does that make you feel like it devalues all the work that you've done? Like you say, like, you don't want to place me just because you think of, like, just because of all the work I've done. Like, you're not like, oh, I'd love to get Crystal the next step. It's actually just, oh, I'd love to be the one that placed a woman in this slot.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, right? Because being female is a non-event, right? It's in my unconscious because it's not something that is important to me on a daily basis. And every now and again, throughout your career, you get a little kidney punch, right? A little short, sharp punch, and you think, oh, it matters. And it matters to other people, but not for the reason that it should. It suddenly matters because the quota's off, right? Yeah. The percentages that we're trying to manage is off. And so then suddenly your sex is relevant. I've always been very open, and actually I usually say this in my interview processes too. And that's, if you're going to give me this position based on my sex, I don't want it.
Wow.
If you're going to award me this position because what I've done in other businesses is inspiring, then we can talk. But I don't ever want to be a because. I got this job because. Yeah. I should get a job because I'm really good at what I do. And I had a very interesting chat in my career, where somebody said, somebody I thought was amazing, actually, it was a job that I really, really wanted. It was a big step for me. And in my day one, I was told that when they saw my name in the pack, that they assumed that it was a gender card, as they called it, right? It was the gender card. There needed to be a certain percentage of women in the pack. Yours was in there. And they genuinely paid my CV no heed. And then I went in and I did the interview and I left, and they were like, oh God, well, that's actually, we don't even want to interview anybody else. And so when I got the job and I was told that, I thought, what's wrong with that you know, what was that that made you think there's a girl in here that's about trying to get the quota up and not about talent? What's that unconscious bias doing? That is like, there's a girl here and it must be because she's a girl rather than because she's Brill.
And it's like the work that they're trying to do to increase diversity is like having undesired consequences, isn't it? Like look, what you've just said there, that's somebody trying to fill a quota that, and they came up with that quota thinking it was a good idea. Like they had the best intentions, but actually it's had the undesired consequence in that we've just completely overlooked Crystal potentially because we just think she's a gender card. And I assume that plays in ethnic minorities and so many other things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I had the interview process that I've just been through actually was probably one of my favorite ever. I was my strongest. I was my most authentic. I asked all those tricky questions. And we had I had a conversation after the contract point, and actually it was really said overtly, no one thing, you are here because you are talented and for no other reason.
Nice.
And I just thought, I've never been more in than in this moment. Actually just knowing that this is not a gender card, this is a talent card.
So, do you have that in the back of your head? Have you had that in the back of your head throughout your career? Like, am I here just to tick a box? Like, does that sometimes come up? Sometimes you just, you know, like, you know, sometimes I get, I think we all get imposter syndrome at some point and we all chat. Like, so for me, it will be, you know, because I'm in the majority, unfortunately, whether I like it or not. It's, you know, I'm white and I'm male. So I'm in that majority. So I never have that question, really. But I do genuinely sometimes get the question like, am I good enough for this role and stuff like that? So in those moments where you may get that, am I good enough? Is that another question that's asked? Like, oh, I'm probably here just because I'm a woman. Do you know what I mean? Or is that not a thing?
Yeah. So I think in my early career, no. In my later career, the more that the gender diversity has become a thing, yes.
Really?
In the beginning, I was just, you know, I started out sort of 19 years old, having gone from Domino's Pizza into a nuclear site. And I was just like, oh, there's cool stuff to touch here. They get to decontaminate buildings, all this sort of cool stuff. The issue in the earlier years was that when you got in, people weren't ready for a female to be in that environment. And both behaviorally and culturally, there was nothing to support a woman in the environment. And actually, I find that we're getting a bit better now at getting more women into the processes, those horrible quotas that put people in the pack. And I've definitely been, as we just discussed, the gender card, but ended up smashing out the park and getting the job. So forcing some of that into packs, I get, being awarded the job on talent, I get. But actually, if you're only fixing the first part of the process, all you women are going to crash out and they're going to move on. Because if you're just dealing getting people in and you're not looking at your behavioural and your culture to keep the women and actually anybody that falls into LGBT, gender, any ethnic minorities, anything like that, then you might get them in, but you're never going to keep them. That's an expensive way to do diversity and inclusion.
So
if you're not tackling the way that you're speaking or your harassment policies or any of your policies around bullying, and you're not prepping your people on unconscious bias, you're never going to keep anyone. You get them in, but they'll just move on. So, and I think the best example would be very early stages. It was as severe as having my butt slapped like every day by numerous men and saying to my boss, I was 19 and these guys were like massive, like rugby player men, all in their 40s and 50s. And me saying to my boss, I really don't like them touching my body. And them saying, well, you're supposed to be one of the lads now, tell them yourself. I'm like, well, actually there needs to be some support. And I was completely left for years with genuine, the unwanted hugs, the butt touching, all of that stuff. And because we hadn't prepped the management to deal with those conversations, we haven't trained anybody to have a difficult convo about appropriate treatment or behaviour. So you need to do the whole bit holistically if you're going to tackle diversity inclusion, really.
So it's, my next question was actually going to be like, you know, so well, what is in those male dominated environments in the time when it was, you know, is accepted maybe, like, because like I've worked in some stereotype, like my first ever, like I was pretty much born and raised working class construction sites and like lads environments, like, and if I'm honest, like it's one of my favorite places to be, like the rugby club where it's all lads, like I just love it, like construction sites. And when I got my first safety job, it was in manufacturing. And I think if it wasn't in that lads environment, I may not have stayed in safety. Like, but actually I just loved that job. Like I loved that place. But when I look back on it now, and I think like, I remember we had a lot of temporary workers and we used one recruiting agency. And because the turnover was just, I mean, it was a horrendous company, really. When I look back on it, culture, like, what is that? Do you know what I mean? It was that kind of company. It was really command and control. The way the managers run it was just shocking. But at the time, I knew no better. Like, for me, it was just like, okay, this is what work looks like. I just need to get myself into the clique that's on the side that's in control, not the being controlled. So I was just like, right, I got my sights set and so on. Anyway, that's kind of not really related to the story. But we got this, because we use this recruitment agency, recruiting was stereotypically a ladies' game. So they were more like lack of diversity, but the other side, really. So we got some recruiters based in the office and we had two ladies. And it was just like these men and the machine had never seen a lady before. Like, and, you know, they had to walk through the factory to get to their office at the top. And it would be like wolf whistles and stuff like that. And at the time, you know, it pains me to say, but at the time, like, I never had the confidence in myself to wolf whistle someone, but you know, it was just like, yeah, that's what happened. That's how life is. That's what work's like and blah, blah, blah. I still think though, thinking back on that, I'm not sure I think any of us would have accepted a slap on the ass. Like that to me just seems a step beyond.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm kind of like, my question was going to be like, what was it like? But for me, I kind of have experienced it partly, but I still would have thought that's not just like lads. That's just
cat
like,
call. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not just lads doing like, all right, darling, that slapping someone on the ass. That's a bit much, I thought, but
yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I suppose it comes to the question, like, is it just like that all the time throughout male dominated environments like nuclear and rail that you've worked in, or was it more company to company? Or culture to culture?
So I think there's definitely something about progression in here. And when I started, so I've got to think what year it was. It was the beginning of 2003, probably, or 2002.
When you started in safety?
When I started in safety. And the site itself had two very particular areas. One was health physics, which is where all your radiation safety technicians lived. And then the other was labs. Now, they were completely diverse. We had loads of people doing really cool things. And typically they made sort of cancer treatments, radioactive cancer treatments. But in my building, it was me and 22 guys. Youngest, I think, was probably 45. I was 19. And then we looked after very closely about 40 male engineers. And so there was literally me. And I think it was total shell shock because I was the first woman or girl even then that they'd ever had in. And it was genuinely just how I was treated. But there was no other women around me so that I knew if it was me, if it was women. I just didn't know because there was nobody working closely with this group of people. And yeah, so slaps on the bar. And actually how I ended up dealing with that is I had to grow some serious courage and I had to address it. And there was one particular guy that used to do it all the time. And I kept getting told, he's been here 40 years. You're not going to ruin his career, are you? Been here 40 years. You're not going to ruin his career, are you?
Like you would have been the bad guy kind of
I would, of course, right? I would be the bad guy. And I remember going into a lab one day and I was working with somebody else, a really old technician, and the technician leant me up against a table and almost like bent me backwards over the table. And he was trying to whisper something in my ear. And I just, in that moment, I wanted the world to swallow me up. And he said something really gross, to which I sort of said, right, going to close the job down really discreetly. And if they hadn't helped me with the butt slapping, they were never going to help me with this. And I got the same answer I got. He's going to retire next year. If you report that, you've ruined it. You're to pull his pension. His grandkids won't have, like, you'll ruin his house, everything. And in the end, I just thought, I'm going to have to start doing this for myself. And I remember saying to the guy the next day that I worked with, slap my ass. And I said, would you do that? It was a guy on the site called Bobby, right? Would you do that to Bobby? Of course not. I said, why'd you do it to me? And he genuinely said to me, does it bother you?
Oh, no.
Like, well, it's my body, so yes. And actually, if you wouldn't do it to Bobby, I want you to respect me in the same way you would Bobby. And he was absolutely mortified, right?
I thought that you liked it. Like, you were like, sure. Yes, slap my arse. Like,
of course.
Oh, my God, no way.
Yeah. So I thought, actually, at that point, they were so, like, wrapped up in their own, like, it must be a compliment, that my duty was to start saying to people, this is ridiculous. This is, like, just pulling people up. But when I went into rail, I kind of prepped myself for the same.
Yeah.
Because old school industry, around the same amount of time, and it wasn't. So the sort of discrimination that you see, I think, definitely takes different guises in different organisations. Lots of discrimination that I've seen around being a parent, maternity leave, breastfeeding, all those sorts of things, seen lots. But it all sort of just augments, depending on the typical culture, I think, of the organisation.
Well, I just think I think I need to acknowledge, like, that story is fucking nuts. That is crazy. That he was like, I mean, firstly, I kind of respect the guy a little bit, that he was mortified afterwards and was kind of like, oh my God. Like, and I assume he didn't do it again. Like,
no, never.
So like, I kind of respect him because he'd been told, he'd acknowledged it. And like, you probably kind of changed his world a little bit, I think, back then. So fair play to him at that point. But like, shit, the kind of, the blinded kind of vision, the narrow-mindedness of that he was kind of just that you were sitting in your office every, it's kind of comical, isn't it? Like, that you're sitting in your office every day being like, God, I love coming to work every day and get like, oh God, it makes me feel uncomfortable just to say it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've worked in some pretty shit places, but that just to me. And I think what's also interesting, I wonder, is that, because I want to come on to what you were talking about, that like the maternity and stuff like that. I think that we need to talk about that definitely. But to pause that for 1 second.
Yeah.
You are 19. So you're also very young.
Yeah.
And I think we're also not very good at dealing with young people either. Like, so, you know, young girl, essentially 19. Do you know what I mean? You're a young girl. My sister-in-law is only 20. You know, she's still at uni. So I still think she's a girl. Like, she'd probably kick my ass if I said that. She'd be like, I'm a woman. But like, you know, you're still very young, aren't you? Like, so there is this assumption, I think, in a youth as well. Like, we're really poor. We're kind of discriminatory. Yeah. Like, we kind of discriminate youth just as much as we do anything else, I think. But I wonder if the youth piece played in your story as well.
Well, I was definitely the only one of my age group anywhere near my team. So I absolutely have no idea whether age played a part in it or not, actually. I just know that it was... what I do think, actually, is we assume, and I see it now, we assume that youth is bullshit, I think. I think we assume, like, you know, we they're young and they're free.
Arrogant,
They're arrogant. And it doesn't matter whether it's generation, was it Z, millennials, whatever. We always just assume they've got it better. And we assume that they're bullshit. And we assume they'll just tell us how it is. And the reality is, actually, you've been out of school 3 years and actually haven't seen a lot of life that isn't by a timetable, by a schedule with a set summer holiday. Mm-hmm. You haven't seen life yet. And you can have people that are a little bit arrogant, a little bit bullshitty, but actually it's very, very easy to impede on their personal boundary. They haven't learned what a boundary is yet. Not in a professional sense. If they're fresh out of university or something, because this is
they've
the first
been protected
time
their entire life, haven't they? Really?
Sure, they've had guidance figures around them, tutors, counselors, parents, all that sort. And suddenly, you're in a professional setting with loads of people that are not governed, right? And my advice was go tell them yourself.
Yeah.
I was a really bullshy, right? And the lad you were saying about lads, right? My whole teens and 20s is exactly where I was. And the thought of saying something to this guy about him slapping my butt was beyond terrifying. And yet I was a really confident teenager. So I think sometimes we assume that everyone's all right speaking up, but actually you need to be there and to look at signs and signals and to listen to the smallest of voices and be willing as a leader to step in and say, I'm going to amplify that voice for you because this is tough. Also going to acknowledge that this is a very strong, good, healthy boundary, and we are going to help you support that boundary. We don't do it.
No, I can.
I don't think we do it well.
Yeah, I can echo that with my own story. And I think that I've told a lot of stories on this podcast. I'm not sure if I've told it on this, but it fits very well to your story. So, it kind of dawned on me. I'm about to say something that was that's quite big in my history. So when I've worked my entire life, literally pretty much just popped out of my mum and I was working, I've literally worked my entire life. So I think I was, just into double figures, and I was probably working for my uncle on a construction site or mowing his lawn or washing his car, doing something.
Yeah.
And then I had my first job. I was 16, 17. I must have been. I remember, when did you get your GCSEs?
15, 16, depending on your age.
So I was getting my GCSEs when I had this job. Because I remember this guy taking me to get my results. So anyway, small paper merchant, big warehouse, terrible safety when I look back on it, but big kind of warehouse, just full of paper, small office at the front. And it was I think it was a franchise, but long story short, you had two owners, a husband and a wife, loveliest people I've ever met. I talked to them for years and years and years, and just coincidentally, we've kind of drifted apart now and I've not seen them for years now, but lovely, lovely people. And then you had the kind of team leader that run the warehouse. And he was a very angry old man, so to speak. But yeah. I've been surrounded by bullshy men my entire life. My uncle's full of it, sarcastic, banter, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But there's one thing I wasn't was very confident. I wasn't confident at all. I still kind of struggle with that now, really, to a lot of people, contrary to popular belief. But anyway, I was in this kind of working environment. And I can't, to the day, remember for the life of me what I said to him, but I do know that my base go-to is humor and digs. That's my go-to all the time. If I'm uncomfortable, if I'm nervous, I'll make a joke, and it will sometimes be about that person or just be something. It will just come out. I really struggle to control it even now at the age of 30. So looking at back on me, I think that's probably what I did. So I probably said something to him from a jovial, bantery point of view, and he must not have fucking liked it, because his hand went whoosh, straight onto my throat, and to the point where he knocked me back, and there was a wall behind me, luckily, or not luckily, depending on how you're looking at it, throttled me basically and picked me up. So I'm full on Captain America stuff, picked me up, feet off the ground, except I'm not Captain America. I'm the poor fucker on the wall, shit. And then he let me down, and I can't remember for the life of me what he said after that. All I vividly remember that point. And I worked there for another year or so afterwards, constantly in fear of that guy. And I remember when I left, I can't, yes, I can remember how they found out. The wife, we were talking away and I was talking to the wife, and I've been raised by women, so I open up a lot better to women than I do to men.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, we were having a chat, but somehow she got it out of me and I told her, and she was like, when did this happen? And I was like, I don't know, like a year ago. And she lost her shit. Like, she lost her shit. She was like, why didn't you tell me, blah, blah, you know, we open door kind of policy. We're here for you, right? And they are such lovely people. Mm-hmm. But what you said would hit the nail on the head. It's easy to say speak up, but you've got to create the right environment in which people feel like they actually can. And that's Absolutely. Really hard. That's yeah. really hard, because this guy's in, who run the warehouse, his persona, his kind of aura that created it, it was his territory. He controlled that. So if it's fear, which it was, when I can kind of psychoanalyze this as I look back on it with my little bit of knowledge and training in this area, look back on it and I go, yeah, shit. Like, it was, he controlled that. That was his territory. And there was no fucking way I was saying anything until I knew I had an out. I had an out. Then she asked me, I look back on it now and I go, right, now I'm safe because I ain't got to come back here. It's not my last day that I told her. And she obviously went and told her husband and he lost his shit.
Yeah.
But I still think the guy worked there for many, many years afterwards.
No, do you know what? You've just hit on something that I feel really passionate about. I think there is a fundamental flaw. I feel so, so strongly about this. There is a fundamental flaw with legislation around discrimination, and there's a window of 3 months to take action from the event of the discrimination. Right now, how long is your average notice period?
It's a month, isn't it? Anything from 3 months to 6 months, depending on where you are in your position, really.
So most of the roles that I've been in have been 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
You have to take action within 3 months. So if you are a
working,
of course, right? So if you are a logical human being that has mouths to feed or a mortgage to pay, and you say, do you know what? My form of action here, just like you, is to say, I'm not happy with this environment. I'm going to find a more nurturing environment to move to. And you are a rational, sound human being. And you're like, right, now my toes in the water. I'm going to see what else is out there. And you typically speak up when you've found somewhere to be, you found somewhere safe to be.
Yeah.
Then that's where things like exit interviews come in, right? People tend to say a lot in exit interviews. But by the time you serve a notice, so forget that's if you were, let's just say, discriminated on day one, you found a job on day one, and then you serve your proper notice, you're still outed your 3 months. There is no way that we are enabling people to take proper action against discrimination if you are saying you have to quit your job or it has to be within 3 months, because nobody can go and make sure that their bills are paid and their babies are fed, right? Because it all times out. Mm. And like you say, when you run on fear, and there's no way that you can just walk into an office and say, this isn't right. Mm. Unless, like you say, you genuinely nurture an environment where it is really open door, and everybody in that environment knows action comes as a consequence of that, rather than, but are you all right there? Did he, are you okay? Neck all right? Well, yeah, but he really scared me. Yeah, but are you okay? And then he works there for 20 more years. And that's even good people that run a business, great people. So there needs to be a whole holistic piece on, you know, how we're really enabling people to speak up. And if people really can't speak up, the legislation, I don't even think, is set up in a way that allows people to address it afterwards.
No, that's fascinating. I never knew that. It just doesn't make sense. And I think as well, there's a naivete to it in that, like, we'll take action then. Well, come on. I'm still working with this person every fucking day. Like, don't be naive that, like, or you can take action against that company. Like, it's easy to sit there and say, well, just sue then. Just go and sue or take action. Yeah, but I've still got to work there.
Yeah.
So, like, you need to think, like, it's a bit naive, really, isn't it?
Yeah. If you think about action in the real world, saying something, acknowledging something, and it being acted upon, it shouldn't be your responsibility to create the action. Actually, it's the organization's responsibility to ensure that you are all reasonably cared for. And if we're all working under duress or under fear or being discriminated against, actually the action's on you. The action's on you to address how your managers act, what your definition of good treatment is, how you want people to engage. It is your responsibility as a business owner to really define and emanate, right? Be the example of great, just behavior. And not go down to the 19-year-old that's just been throttled to say, well, that's on you, pal, right? Absolutely outrageous. Of course it's not. It's down to you as a business owner to say to the individual that's discriminating, that's not how we do it here. No. And it's not how we will either.
And just like we'll kind of move on to the maternity stuff, because I think that's really interesting. But fair play, and thank you very much for sharing your story. So I thought that was, especially the story around the ass slapping and the event that happened with that gentleman, I think that's quite powerful. And I think it must have taken quite a strong young lady to be able to turn around and take control of that yourself. So well done.
Thank you.
No worries. Oh gosh, I tell you what, this diversity miniseries is banging out some crazy stories, and you just don't realize. Like, we did it ages ago now, but I've got a few interviews sitting ready to go as part of this miniseries, and I am quite nervous about putting it out, because some of the stories are really like, maybe harrowing's not the right word, but they're really like, shit, like this stuff happens. And it is a minefield of an environment. Like, I don't want anyone to come back and say, oh, James said this wrong, and it completely devalue the message that I'm trying to do something good here. This space is just really hard to kind of operate in, isn't it? Like, to try and do something right. Kind of like the similarity to what we said about the quotas, like you're trying to do the best thing. And I spoke to Sam Goodman, who runs another podcast in America called The Hop Nerd, and he's a gay man, and he's got, you know, a beautiful husband and a beautiful daughter, and you know, he's very out with it, he's very vocal about it, and he's really passionate about kind of sharing his story and hoping, you know, helping the profession learn and industries learn. So we got him to talk on it, and his story is just like, Jesus Christ, yeah. This stuff is real, man. It really is. Yeah. Like, this isn't just like the woke left talking about, you know, because it's nice to have. Like, yeah. This shit still really does happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on the topic of maternity, and actually, I want to acknowledge that it is really difficult to operate in this space. And actually, that's what gives discrimination power, is it feels really tricky to talk about it. And we're not sure the language to use, and we're not sure if something's going to make somebody an inspiration, or if it's going to backfire and suddenly be, you know, we're being inflammatory.
Yeah.
But actually, how we create a safe space to talk about it is just by keep having the tricky convos, right? Just by keep talking about it. And actually, there is a real risk without these conversations that you can kind of sit back and think, it's not really a big deal. Not, you know, there's not lots of hurt going on. Because as we have just discussed, it's not very easy to talk or speak up when you are being hurt.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a really great example that when I went on maternity leave, my husband at the time was a builder, and he always wanted to give up work and be a full-time dad. And I was like, I believe in total equality, right? Me and him have an equal right to be at home. If he wants it, damn straight, right? Planned it all out. We got to the bit before I went back to work, and I went in for one of those sort of introductory meetings. And I said, one of the things to put on the table is I was breastfeeding. And before I got the second sentence out, I was told, if you're going to come back and request flexible working to breastfeed, it'll give me a real concern over your role. And I was like, so bearing in mind, I work in safety, right? Health and safety. And it was basically made very, very apparent after that conversation that working in the office that was 20 minutes from my door, so I could sort of nip home and breastfeed Emily 3 times a day, was absolutely off the cards.
No way.
And I had to wean Emily from 100% breastfed to bottle in 4 weeks over Christmas.
Shit.
And I can't tell you the absolute internal depression that that brought me and her, because I felt like my want for equality, my want to be able to have an equal relationship with my husband and allow him to be a full-time dad, was costing her somehow. For me to be the breadwinner cost her her ability to be breastfed. And I really struggled with that for quite a long time. And there was nowhere to put that conversation because it's a very tricky thing. And so I think using these examples, and I use them, and actually I really dig deep. If I'm making any decision from a managerial perspective, from a leader perspective, I always put myself immediately in the person talking to me's shoes and think, what would I want to do? And sometimes it's, I want you to ask me more questions because it's not easy for me to say what's hurting me. Mm. Sometimes it's, I want you to make a decision. Sometimes it's action, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I absolutely know from that experience, anyone that works with me that goes on maternity leave, that's tough coming back anyway. And the guilt and the parent guilt, all that stuff you have to live with. The best thing I can do for you is to say, are you ready? What do you need? How can I help you? Because also people don't really understand the mind numb that goes on maternity leave. It's like you're talking to a babbling child that can't talk yet. And intelligent women need good conversation, or all women, everybody needs good conversation and interaction. And so it's just about, how can I enable you to do your best, be your best, and actually limit that parent guilt? And that's just based on me being hurt in the past. And, you know, if you don't learn from mistakes, especially from the mistakes of others, then, you know, what are we doing? We're definitely not evolving as leaders.
Oh, hear. I mean, that was, I love that you've brought this up for a few reasons.
Mm.
One, there's kind of so much in this, like, yeah. What I've just had a baby, as you know, so I got a 7-month-old baby, and my wife is currently coming to the end of her maternity leave.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to see how it's going on and actually how much anxiety that's causing in my wife of not really understanding what's going on. And there is some context to my wife's story in that she severely slipped a disc early on in there. So she can't go back to the kind of, she works in a hospital, so she can't go back to the like patient handling role that she used to do because it just ain't gonna happen. And her physio is like, yeah, you can do that, but she can go and do admin roles because she used to be head of operations basically for a multinational kind of distribution center.
Amazing. So
she can smash that shit out like any day. So just being able to transition and say like, well, I'm sorry, here's what my physio is saying. I can't come back on the ward. And they're like, yeah, okay, that's fine. And it's because it's not an easy transition, because it's not a smooth, yes, here's your job. That's now created so much anxiety in my wife. That's just like, well, what am I going to be when I go back now? What am I going to do? Like, we're defined by our work so much, aren't we? Like,
yeah,
I could not imagine just taking 9 months out and then slotting back into your role. And I think no matter what that role is, you know, maybe some roles are easier to slot back into than others, but like, that must be a massive challenge. And that we're not very good at, like, I think of now experiencing all the stuff that my wife's gone through, I approach maternity risk assessments, return to work completely different.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you just said. It's all about enabling that person that's on leave or in that situation to be able to turn around and say, this is right, this is wrong, this doesn't work for me, that does work for me, and explore that. Like, yes, there may be things that I'll be able to play to expand on, or be able to say, well, couldn't we do this? You know, just throwing solutions out there. Not like I'm the person that knows anything, but just, could this work? Could this work? Could this work? Mm. Kind of thing. And no, that wouldn't work. But that could work actually, and just explore, you know, having an emergent conversation essentially is what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I would approach it so much more different than what I would of before I'd actually experienced it through my wife.
Well, I think what you're hitting on there, my true belief between the different types of safety, I see inverted commas types of safety, because it's all just looking after people. We just have different styles and different things that we put bigger values on. The bit that's missing from safety, and you've nailed it, is empathy.
Yes,
right?
Definitely.
And actually, I think one of the things that would fix the gender issue is actually if we really, really marketed safety as what it is, which is it's a care profession, right? You can be a doctor, you can be a nurse, a physician, a physio, you could be a health and safety manager and take care of the health and the safety, mental, physical, psychological of people.
Yeah.
This is a care role.
Yeah.
And actually what's happened over the years is we've had a whole bunch of people that we've designed a whole bunch of very dry forms and we tick them, right? Are you coming back to work? Tick. Enter your date. Write it in there. Are you going to assume all your roles?
We have provided you a room for breastfeeding and right. Do you know what I mean? We could just give her the first aid room, this horrible sterile room to be able to just go and sorry, I've interrupted you, but that point I think is so powerful, because actually I didn't know, because I'm a man, I know, a young man, like I've no idea actually how hard it is to breastfeed, how challenging it is, how vulnerable you feel, like honestly, naively, just thought it'd be like baby, boob, boom, off we go. Like the baby could be different. You could have one baby and it loves it, next baby doesn't love it. If you're nervous and because there's people around, that if you're in a fucking first aid room, you know, and you're not relaxed, the baby's not gonna be relaxed. Like I just think about, like, so many times I've just gone, well, we've got the first aid room, they could use that in my career, and now I would be like, yeah, I'm fucked if we're putting her in a first aid room,
right? Like, because you can totally empathize, having seen someone that you love, and you think, actually, how do I want her to be treated? Mm-hmm. How do I want her to? And actually, the bit that comes with empathy is respect.
Yes, yes.
And by saying, you know, I don't know, Crystal's returning. There is what they're looking for is a room to breastfeed that we can close the door on. That is a very clinical assessment of what my needs are. Mm-hmm. What I actually need is a place where I don't feel like I'm in the way. And I don't feel like I'm being hidden because it's, you know, it's a bit of a problem. We're sort of juggling it. I want to be treated like the absolutely smashy individual that I am, juggling my baby, juggling my profession, doing it all. And the pride I feel can be eroded with very simple things like she can just use the first aid room. Mm. When you attach empathy and respect to our profession, it does change conversations so dramatically. And it may be that you have a first aid room, but do you have a comfy chair?
Yeah, exactly. Because
actually it can take a little minute not to focus too much on breastfeeding, but even think about return from maternity leave and how much stress that can cause. Now, if you're talking to somebody returning from maternity leave now, you'll be able to empathize and come right back to your wife, and you'll be able to picture her and think, okay, actually I can remember what this, you know, my witnessing of these emotions and this feelings, and she's going to try and be so professional to show that she's ready to come back to work. What she's carrying is a very big backpack of guilt, because she really wants to come back because her, you know, your mind's a bit numb, or it might be they have to financially, but they don't really want to. Yeah. So many feelings mixed up in there. And like you say, right back to that empathetic conversation of what do you need to feel like you smashed your day?
Yeah.
Right. Let's try and make that happen.
Yeah. And you need to do it like that, because there's no standardized approach to this. Like we have friends who have had babies, and breastfeeding for them is just like, literally like what I just said, like boom, baby, boom, off we go, whip it out anywhere, I'm done, it works perfect, easy peasy. And then we have friends that weren't comfortable with that. So it depends on you, your personality, the situation, your experience, whether you and the baby are having a good connection there. So sometimes, you know, the baby just ain't doing it. And and you kind of said earlier as well, the thing that you said earlier, which I can really understand, is when you are in a way kind of forced, unintentionally by your husband or your ex-husband, I think it was, and your employer to wean your baby onto bottles, like as a man that didn't experience that would probably be like, well, just put the baby on bottles, just put the baby on. But actually, again, I've been enabled to have empathy of that because Sherry went to hospital, and because of the amount of drugs that she was on because of her back, we had to put Maggie on bottles, and because Sherry was in hospital for 4 days as well, and I'd grown some boobs over the dad bod time, but they didn't work. so you know, we had to put Mags on bottles. And actually, the word you said, like the guilt that Sherry kind of just felt, that I had to kind of work with her and say, Maggie's still getting what she needs, like I understand, but you know, there should be no guilt there. Like, there's so much more to this that actually just saying those things that you say, like, how can I help you just be you and be successful as you? What can I do to help you? Are you okay? You know, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think starting with people's picture of what good looks like, or success, because actually success for a returning mum might not be a good day, because God, you know, right now, right in this minute, I don't want to be here. I'm looking forward to hot tea. Every mum will say it. Every returning parent will say it. Looking forward to hot tea. But actually everything else in here is just feeling a little bit like, I don't really want to be doing this. So actually, what does success look like? Your best day at work, talk to me about what that looks like, and let's try and build on that, as opposed to sort of stick to the checklist. I think if we're really going to address equality in the workplace and diversity in the workplace, and I'm very unpopular in some discussions for saying this, but we really need to think about how we're equipping men to take time at home as well.
Yes.
Because we don't.
Yes.
We say to the men in our lives, or the co-parents in our lives, you've got 10 days. And I know from having a 4-day birth in an emergency C-section and very near to a blood transfusion, 10 days is a joke.
Yeah, it's a fucking joke.
Right, you can't even drive after a C-section for 6 weeks. And I think if we're really going, and this is that whole thing at the beginning where I said about holistically looking at diversity, you have to enable what you're trying to aim for. If you're saying the world is made up of 50% women, we want our organization to be 50% women, cool. Expect for the rest of that population that you're displacing with men to have an equal opportunity to be at home and raise their children then.
Yeah, because that doesn't exist.
Right, it doesn't. No. And so, you know, I remember having a conversation when I went to swap some of my maternity leave. And there was a policy now that means that you can swap some maternity leave. And my ex-husband was a builder, like I said. And I said, how do I give the rest of my maternity leave to him? And I was basically told, no one really knows, because the government have made it so, at the time it was new, complicated.
Yeah.
We had to just forego it and just like let it go, which is such a shame. Wow. And you know, the guilt actually in him watching me, because he'd given up his job by the time this awkward conversation happened, there was no going back. So he had to watch me transition Emily for you know, over 4 weeks and over Christmas, crying, both of us, because this is kind of what we decided. But tell me how we've, you know, how we've equipped men to be able to thoroughly support. And I'm going to say it, bond. You cannot expect a father that has on Saturday seen his baby be delivered, and in a couple of Saturdays' time, he's back at work for if we're all living the dream, a 37-hour week, which never actually happens. and he's back to work having to totally focus. And now, bigger responsibility. That salary is so much more important now.
Yeah.
How is he bonding?
He's not.
Right?
I'm telling you that now, he's not. I can quote for myself, he is not. And I have been extremely... I am so passionate about this for obvious reasons. Yeah. But like... You know, Maggie was born 7 months ago, and I was, in a way, I was damn lucky that there was a global pandemic. Like, this global pandemic for me has done me so many favors, and it's tore lives apart. And I don't say that to devalue their experience, but how it's landed for me is yeah. I've been damn lucky, because actually I'm working two bedrooms away from my baby girl, and I can finish a Zoom call, make a coffee and go and see her, and I can bond. So yeah. here's a reason why this is so passionate, why this is for me just cuts me so deep, is I was, as I said earlier, raised by women. I was raised in a fatherless household and never understood it. I never understood it. I still to the day probably don't really understand it. But when I look at it, society doesn't allow fathers to bond, because we give them 2 weeks and then we tell them, get back to work.
Yeah.
Get back to work. It's like, hang on a minute. How can I bond with my child in 2 weeks? Yeah. And there's so many separated families out there. And I just look at it and I'm just like, how much better would the world be if we allowed fathers to bond with their children
100%.
Without having to steal the maternity off of their wife as well? Because I think that's disgusting. Because
if I get a chance, it's taking something give me a chance.
And me and Sherry had this exact conversation when she was pregnant with Maggie. And I was like, I would like longer maternity. Like, I knew I wanted longer maternity.
Yeah.
And I would have had to have took it off Sherry. And I'm just like, no, I'm not comfortable doing that. I don't think that's fair. And lucky I didn't, because, you know, with a slip disc and all that, you know, it would have been a nightmare. But I just look at it and I'm just, like I say, I've been lucky. And I feel so, you know, I know a couple of men in my friendships and families that have gone to work in a warehouse or somewhere on site or whatever, 2 weeks after it. And I just think, I tell you what, if they're anything like me, they ain't present, that's for sure.
Yeah, of course, not they're present. Worried. Because actually, you don't know, especially if it's your first. When everyone knows that fear of when you get home with that baby carrier from the car and you think, oh, Christ. Mm. Okay, right, we're just going to have to sort of fathom this out. And actually, 2 weeks in, and this is the other bit, I sort of joked about it with a couple of my female friends, that at 2 weeks, if you're super, like Emily slept loads, it was like, oh, the first couple of weeks, they're quite still, quite quiet, right? They're still just sort of not really realising they're out of mum. And then by the time your partner goes to work, that's when it breaks, 100%, right? Yeah. Absolutely. And actually, it's gutting for, I think, the mum to be on her own, if she is. Yeah. And it's gutting for dad to be able to go out that door. And actually, dad, co-partner, you know, other mum, whatever it is, other dad, the partner to leave their partner when it is all so new, so scary, and everything depends on you, is so much. And you also see the anxiety in life that then that creates, where, you know, Pops is at work or the other partner's at work all day, all week, you know, doing their damnedest to make sure the house is sort of running and everyone's safe and fed. And then the birthing mum wants to, I don't know, nip to Tesco, just a bit of sanity. Yeah, and they're they go over the nappies and they go over the sleeping, they go over that. And you're like, you've told me, babe, you've told me 10 times, but you haven't been given long enough, not only for you to bond with baby, but for both of you to become a unit and be parenting together.
And that
brings in itself a full confidence that you can both take a second out if you need to. Because either one's not leaving the other one, like hanging you out to dry, and the other one's not feeling like they're bailing. I think society, definitely, that's one thing that we really have to do. If we want more women in the workplace, especially if we want more women in leadership, where it's not a typical 9-to-5er, we really need to look at how we treat men in the parental sense, or co-partners in the parental sense.
Yeah, 100%. And that comes into, you know, what's it called, paternity leave. And that also comes into society not assuming that men don't know how to raise children. Because I'd like to speak on behalf of all dads. We are not stupid and we know what we're doing. So stop patronising me, please.
Yeah.
And that's not just grandparents. That's nurses. There's a straight up assumption that men don't give a shit, that we're not here to because we care, that we're here because the wife has told us that we should go along. And I'm telling you now, I've never experienced sexism in my entire life until Sherry fell pregnant, but sitting in meetings with nurses and so on, and I'm like, shit, is this what sexism feels like?
Yeah,
because it's fucking annoying. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like getting to, I remember sitting in a car once with, and I'm like, Sherry, I'm not being funny. If another nurse talks to me like that, I'm going to lose my shit.
Yeah.
Because
I'm
here because I care about you and my baby. I'm not here because lunch just fell at an all right time and I thought I might just pop along. Or if I don't come along, I'm in the doghouse. Like, yeah, honestly, society needs to pull their socks up and start treating men as well. Like, it's okay for us to be dads.
And that's that thing about unconscious bias is absolutely two-way. And I remember in 1 week having being witness to sort of two conversations. One of them was my ex-husband was having a really tough week at home with Emily, right? And bearing in mind, you know, couldn't find a public changing room that he could go in because he was male with Emily. He was full-time dad, right?
Yeah,
everyone was then questioning, why are you giving up building? Why are you doing the girl bit? Everything was a mummy and baby group. It was all that stuff. And it was a total alien world. He was full time. And then I remember him having a tricky week and somebody who I really thought was my friend said to me, oh, maybe you can give up on this silly notion of you being a professional, get home to your daughter, take care of her and let him work.
Oh shit. Like steam coming out ears, steam coming out noses.
Honestly, everything in me was like white hot. And I was going to leave the room.
Like, how dare you be a professional woman?
And stop it. Like the assumption that I'd stopped, that would only be a decision that the woman had the power to make and would have forced upon the man. And actually, it absolutely wasn't.
Yeah.
And it was a silly notion.
It was kind of the other way around by the sounds of your situation.
He absolutely wanted to do it. He loved the idea of being a dad. And I just think it's an equal right. We had a conversation and said it's a level playing field. What do we want to do?
I'm here, by the way. My camera's just died. Carry on.
Yeah. So and then, you know, he was at home for 4 years and I was at home for 9 months. And you know what? Damn, like that whole thing about patronizing, assuming that men can't parent, what a joke. Absolutely outstanding dad. My current partner, my boyfriend Richard, we've been together for several years, and he is a single parent to his little boy, the most outstanding dad. Let's stop pretending that dad's or the co-parent is the second option, right? Because it's not. The both parental roles are exactly the same.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just remove all judgment. Like one of the biggest problems that we have is just judging people. Like, and I love Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know if you've ever come across him. Like
no.
A massive podcaster, massive YouTuber, but he's like a straight up marketeer, businessman, you know, investor, stuff like that. And people think that's all he is. Like, I'll watch him because he's really good at business. But if you actually listen to what he talks about all the time, it's lessons for society. It's lessons for safety. It's lessons for psychological safety. Because one of the best lines that he took, which I have literally taken away with me and in this household, because I was raised in quite a judgy environment. Like my family were raised to judge people. Like, oh, that's your car. You're doing it right, aren't you? That's your car. You're not doing very well, kind of thing. And that's ingrained in me for a long time, which didn't help my own self-esteem either. But like when you look at it, and he says one thing, which me and my wife pretty much live by all the time now, is you can't judge without context.
Yes.
You don't know me, so don't judge me. You cannot judge without context. And he said, I will not judge you because I do not know the full story. And that is exactly the same with this. It's like you can't judge a woman for coming back to work, and you can't judge a dad for not, or to you've quite rightly corrected it several times, co-parent. See, and it's all a transition. Like for me, trying to remember, actually, it's not typically man and woman. It could be man and man, could be woman and woman, and so on and so forth. But you know, it's just what it doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me in any way, shape, or form what your decision is.
Yeah.
But if I'm the employer, I'm just here to try and make sure that what you want to do is come back to work. How does that work? Because frankly, I want you to do well at work.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, I don't make any fucking money.
Yeah.
So is it not, doesn't that just make sense for me to look after you?
Yeah. And in terms of looking after as well, I always hark back to a really amazing guy that I used to work with, nicknamed Lakey, right? So Lakey, amazing guy. And he had 2 weeks paternity to take. And there was so much pressure in this work environment because he was such a linchpin. And there was really subtle requests about him splitting that paternity leave. Could you delay it a bit? Does she need you immediately? And, you know, when you look at a situation and you think, what are you doing? Again, where's that empathy? Because actually, if he is, even let's just say he felt fairly benign about the whole thing. He didn't, but let's just say he did. And he was like, you know what? Yeah, fine. You know, I'll split it. I'll take a week at the beginning and a week and a month. You're fundamentally getting in the way of any possible bonding,
yeah,
and maybe support and maybe anything for his wife and him to then form, because you're about to walk into a new area of your entire life. It's mm-hmm. not you anymore. It's not you two. It's actually the unit. And I think I also remember him coming back after those split weeks. And I remember there being no conversation, no like, how are you? No empathy around actually how it might feel for him to be at work either. So, well, yeah, I think
there isn't a return to work for dads or co-parents or anyone coming back off two weeks paternity leave.
No.
There is no return to work. Like, I didn't have a return to work. And I don't blame my employers for that. Like, I just think that society, legislation, whatever, all of the context that's there doesn't tell an employer that that's something you should do.
Yeah.
And the day that when we look at this and go, well, I tell you what, there's a great example of the potential that this could have.
Yeah.
If you go and watch Netflix Explained miniseries, and there's one episode on the gender pay gap, and they basically say it's not a gender pay gap, it's a parental pay gap. And it's fascinating. Go and watch that. It's only 20 minutes. Great miniseries. Like, if you want to watch a series and learn about loads of shit, like loads of random stuff, so good. Really well produced. Netflix Explained. Honestly, best thing I've ever watched. So good. Watch it.
I do think we're coming into an era now where we're getting better at starting these conversations. Mm. And actually, even like you said earlier, I feel nervous about talking about all this stuff and thinking, oh, you know, it's troublesome, tricky territory. But actually, to actually really acknowledge how it feels and really acknowledge reality is important. So things like miniseries on Netflix, things like gender pay gap reports and all these sorts of things are so important to put out there. And I also think the reality of really talking about what COVID has brought in terms of exposure, and what it's made us suddenly acknowledge, thrust us to acknowledge. And that is, by the way, quite a lot of your people have children.
Oh, shit. What?
I know that we all pretend that's not true, right? And then we all come back and we sort of disappear for a bit if we have children, or 2 weeks or 6 months or a year or whatever, and we come back. And then we might have a picture on the desk, but none of it impedes or presses on or is brought to life in any way.
Yeah,
because we're at work and we're professionals.
Yeah, because if we don't have that separate line, hell and damnation will rain upon us all, because people and their personal lives are separate and must always be separate.
Oh, the newsflash.
For God's sake.
Guess what? We employ people.
I know, right?
Right? We employ actual people with souls and hearts and families. And COVID made us metaphorically and physically switch on the camera. Right? And acknowledge what it really feels like to juggle work and being a parent and the tricky scenarios that really, really brings. And COVID closed all schools and it allowed people to have one-to-ones with the million, like the children, the back and forth, the, you know, the conversations that you have to have on a daily basis. And COVID might have put the child physically in the room, crying, needing juice, needing to be fed. Don't think that when your people aren't at work, they're not thinking, are they all right?
Yep.
Are they eating?
Yeah.
Oh, God. As you know,
why are they crying? And yeah.
All that, right? All that stuff. And I think this is probably the most honest and real we've all had to be, because we're now really talking. Like, I hate that it's okay to not be okay, because we haven't made it okay yet, right? Mm. So just, oh, it's all right. It's okay to not be okay, and that's absolutely fine. Well, okay, does that mean that everyone's having really honest, open conversations about how they feel, and that we all know how to support our colleagues that aren't okay? Because an unequipped conversation around mental health can actually be, you know, really difficult, really damaging. And again, like the gender thing, if we're not looking at this holistically and looking at all the tools and the foundations that are required to make this successful, it's the same that needs to be applied to mental health.
Yeah.
And actually, I have really, really chosen in this pandemic to be very honest about my parental responsibilities and how tricky that's been, how I'm feeling, telling my team the days that, you know what, today can swallow me up because I'm so done and I'm so knackered and I'm really trying my best.
Yeah.
And I really do feel with all of this stuff, all of us are in a position of, especially in leadership, it's so vital, so, so vital. It doesn't matter what you're tackling, whether it's bias of any sort, whether it's the gender pay gap, parental, whatever it is, you have to really, really be doing this for real and have the real conversations like this, right? Even if sometimes they're uncomfortable. And I shared it with you on another internet thing, but there was a really big day that I had a really big meeting in the middle of the pandemic. And my daughter said to me before the call, "Mommy, I'm really lonely." And she'd been on her own for months. I've been feeding her, right? But she'd been like sitting in the living room watching a million movies. I've been trying to keep my people safe, making sure that they were taken care of. And she said to me just before this meeting with unions that was there because they wanted to hammer, was I doing enough? I'm really lonely. And I was like, all right, bub, come here. Cradled her. And I went on that union meeting and I turned on my camera. And I said to all the union people there, and I think from memory there was 8. And I said, I'm just going to say this up front, guys. This is Emily. She's not all right. She actually really needs her mum. She's really lonely. Now I'm good, right? I want to have this meeting with you. If she's okay, I'm okay. Right now she's got what she wants, but this is what life looks like now, right? This is what the pandemic looks like right now. And I could turn my camera off and I could pretend this is not a thing. And you'd never know she was here, but this is real. And, you know, we had that call and everybody on the call was distracted for a couple of minutes. Then we got into it. We had a great call, really, really solid conversation. And at the end, one of the union members just said, "I really hope she's okay."
Oh, wow.
And you know what? Somebody on that call felt comfortable enough to have the proper professional conversation because, you know, crazy, but I can be a mum and be a professional and be great. They're not sort of mutually exclusive. And the empathy kicked in, the real kicked in, because I chose in that moment to leave that room and say, we're all people. And actually sometimes we're really not okay. And I'm not going to hide it from you. I'm actually just going to own it. And we're all just going to live with the reality. And you have to. And some of the women that work for me in that, we're just like, you've literally changed. It feels like you've changed the world, because I now feel like I can go on my calls and say, I'm having a tricky day, right? And I wasn't doing it to give permission, but I led. I really led by example. It's so important. So important.
I love that story. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was watching the clock and we were talking and I was like, I need to get the story in about Emily and the Zoom call, and I need to make sure she says that's such a powerful story. And also, there's a reason I want you to ask, because I've got a question around that. Do you think it's socially acceptable if a man did it the same?
Do you know what? I think my honesty is, and this might, and again, this might be a biased thing, right? If a dad came on the call and said, my baby's not all right, my first question would be, do you want to do this call or do you need some time?
Yeah.
And I think there's something about this, about being real in the room. And actually, you wouldn't be talking to me as a colleague. You'd be talking to me in that minute as a dad, a colleague, a person. And you'd be saying, this is much. This is really much. And I have to say, I'd be taking my hats off to the fact that it's dad there cradling. Like, Em was there, like a little whimpering mess. I rocked the whole time like a proper crazy mum. And I do think so. But I think it takes another moment, maybe, like me with my lot. And it fed into a conversation later, you know, about performance. We were talking about performance of team members. And we were talking about what good looks like. Yeah. And how we can try. We have to really have active conversations about not discriminating against people that have done incredible work, and they've been juggling everything else as well. Because for me, effort's effort, right? And if you're up and staggering your day and you're working from like 1 till 3 in the morning because that's your peaceful place and it's your bit of, hats off, man. Mm. Like, mum, dad, co-parent, whatever. I think there's space for all of us in the room. Sometimes it just takes that leap of faith to put yourself there. But I don't know about other people, but the more we do it,
we need to be the change we want to see, don't we, really?
That's a phrase I love, you know, be the change you want to see. Because I think the reality is, at the very beginning of COVID, everyone was anxious about children walking into the room, the panic about trying to do work without it becoming apparent. It took us a year, but it took us a year of being consistent in not being able to control it to be able to get to a point to say, do you know what? Yeah, cool. There's kids everywhere. Right. Should we just carry on then?
Because there is a really good example of this. I mean, I'll let you go in a minute, Chris, so I can't sure don't take up too much of your Sunday. But there's a really good example of this, and it was before COVID. Remember the BBC interview?
Oh, I loved it. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And the bloke didn't react greatly, right? And everyone blamed the bloke, right? And I actually, at the time, I was like, I didn't have a child when that happened. And I remember looking at it, and I was probably the same as what most of the society was like, why don't you just pick his kid up and just have them and cradle him? Bear in mind, he's obviously a pretty high-hitting journalist on the BBC, but yeah. I think the world is now different to what it was then, and I would like to see that happen now and see what was different. But
yeah.
I think when we think about all this context we've been talking about and how it's not as acceptable in the professional environment to acknowledge that that men are dads as well, or co-parents, and that they're part of this relationship, co-parenting, co-raising, you know, we're just these people that just have 2 weeks just to kind of, I don't know, build the fucking IKEA cots and that's all we're good for, and then bugger off back to work.
Yeah.
And there's a video of like what would happen if a woman was a journalist, and she would just, and it's quite funny, but you know, I'm not kind of tearing it apart. I thought it was funny. Like the woman's there with a bottle and she starts doing the washing up or ironing or something as well. It's really funny. And they're like, this is what would happen if that happened to a woman. But like what we don't know is the context. So what if he'd have picked that baby up and done what we said that he should have done? He should have picked that baby up and gone, yeah, so the current economic state of South Korea, blah, blah, blah. And what would have happened in a behind the scenes? I think society or his employer probably would have said that wasn't very professional. I think he was damned if he did, damned if he didn't, because I think he got a rollicking either way.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think the reality is, and this comes back into a little bit of like, is there underlying judgment here, right? Because I can say, and like, this is, I'm going to be really brave here and say something that I'm not comfortable with. At the very beginning of the pandemic, when we were all pretending that children didn't exist, because that definitely happened for a couple of months, a month or so.
Yep.
I do remember Emily. I was in the middle of a call and she's wandered up. And now my daughter is loud, right? She is loud. And she was sort of storming upstairs and she was shouting, "Mummy!" And I, without thinking, I just closed the door, trying to just mute the sound a little bit and then hoping that she would see the door shut and be like, oh, cool. She wasn't on her own, right? It's not like I just left her sort of play with knives or anything. Right? But I gently closed the door And do you know what? She was just coming up the door as it clicked shut, and everything in me, I felt so angry with myself because I just shut the door in my daughter's face. And even though it was gentle, even though she wasn't alone, everything in me was like, that's not human. And that's not me. And somehow this environment makes me feel like I had to do that. Okay. What can I change about this? Because this doesn't feel comfortable. Right. And actually, the gentleman in just like that situation, the gentleman in that clip, it was unexpected. It wasn't by design. And because he's human, forget male and female. He was caught off guard and he panicked. Yeah. Right. And actually, so did it was his wife, I think. So did his wife. Right.
Oh, that's a great clip where she shuttled in the room,
dragged them out.
So good. Right? So
everyone good. Panicked. But instantly we place a lens on that guy and assume. Yeah. Right. That there's an instant comparison between him being a dad and what the mother would do. And actually, he's just a human and he panicked and he was on the BBC. And actually, if I was on with the BBC and everybody come wandering in telling me that she needed the toilet or whatever she would do, I'd be like, human. It's absolute human.
I think I love the way you put that. I think it's so true. I think that's so true. And it's funny, isn't it? Because everything that we're learning in safety, when you get opened into this, when you start looking at the behavior piece and you start going, what does make people make these behavior, make these decisions? What does create behavior? The environment creates the behaviors. You know, that's in my title segment of this podcast for a reason, because we think that we're just like, we watch a video like that man on the BBC and we judge him and say, I would have made a much better decision than you and I would have behaved much better than you. Probably wouldn't have, mate. No. Because if you're in the exact same situation, you probably wouldn't. And if you want a really good example of that, go and watch the film Sully, because I remembered to this day, I think, have I put this episode out? I haven't put this episode out, but I watched that film and was like, well, if you want an example of human factors and how it works and how to break it down, watch that film.
Really?
In the court case, as they go through it and they put all the people in the simulators and stuff like that, and they reenact it, blah, blah, blah. And he basically goes, it's not the same situation though, is it? And he actually says the line, which I'd forgot about until I interviewed Helen Heenan, who's like a pilot and now a trainer. He actually says the words, as she told me, you're not considering the human factors.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, did he actually say that? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, I need to watch it again because I don't remember that. But that is it. When that's what we just don't do that stuff. We watch that video and we just go, I would have been better than that. And I do it as well. I think everybody does it. That's our base reaction. Oh, why did he do that? But let's not judge without the context. No. Like, consider the human factors. Consider the environment he was in.
Yeah. Damn. Like, and it's back to that thing you said earlier about snap judgments without context are absolutely meaningless.
Mm.
Absolutely meaningless.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of this is programmed by, and this is, I think, almost full circle back to that point about what you deem success, you know, what your, when you go into a company, their values are what should align to your values, right? And in that, you should have a really joint perception of what success looks like.
Yeah.
Because if I go into, you know, a company whose success looks like a 60-hour week, right? And success looks like you might be a parent, but it never comes into it.
Yeah.
Cool. That's not my value, not right? I'm a whole individual. But then you look at a company like the one I've just gone to, you know, ask them all about how flexible they are with families, how they feel about, and just so much positive energy about enabling being a parent, to the point I had a separate call just on being a parent with my boss. This is what success looks like for me, boss. And this was before I accepted the position. And he phoned me the next day, you know, and he said to me, I'm phoning you just to tell you I heard you. Just to tell you I heard every word you said about being a mum, every word you said about if she's okay, you're okay. And it doesn't really matter what you need, we'll make it work. And that is a company making real strides to be better. what do you need to be? Same with the returning mom, same with a dad, same with a co-parent. What does success look like for you? What's your perception of success? Does it align with mine? Cool. Then this is going to be great. Yeah. You know,
because I think like the way you say it is like you're they're enabling you to be a parent. Actually, what I think they're doing is they're enabling you to be able to work because they're enabling you to be a parent in a way. Like, so to look at it from an like, I'm trying to talk now to the people that probably don't get this, the people that are struggling to be like, oh God, this is just a load of far left hippy dippy stuff. Like these woke millennials, blah, blah, blah. Like, do you know what? If you want to label me, I'm happy with being called a woke millennial, if I'm honest. But do you know, it's like, I'm trying to talk to those people that like actually to really realize what you're doing now is just think how well Crystal is going to be able to work for that employer now that she's had that enablization, I suppose, that kind of, you know, that process that has enabled you, your life, to mold itself into that workplace to enable you to succeed. And actually, do you know who I'm talking to? I'm talking to the people on LinkedIn that go, that's a Facebook post when somebody puts up a post about their family or their dog or something like that. That's not for LinkedIn. Like, and you're just like, no, mate, you need to realize they're one and the same.
Yeah.
Not Facebook and LinkedIn, people professional and people personal is one and the same. Once you get that, we'll be so much better off.
Absolutely. I had a conversation with one of the ladies that worked for me quite early on, and I had the, what do you need? Right. And she said, actually, some of what she needed was acknowledgement and praise through. So she knew what she was putting in as her best was right.
Yeah.
And I'll get to the coaching part after about, you know, it's your best, value that, put that aside. And she said, also, I'm going to work really random hours and it's not going to be your core 9 to 5 a bit. Actually, I'm really awake at night and, a twilight for me and some time in the day with my kids. I just enabled all of it. Okay, cool. Right. This woman exercised a project that my company had struggled with for 8 years. Right. And it was a massive public facing project. And she nailed that to a wall in 6 months.
Nice.
You are incredible. What do you need? I need to be able to do my own hours. I need to know my kids are okay. And I'll be able to sit in the garden while they're on the trampoline in the day. I need to be able to do the twilight that suits me. And I need to be able to crush my work. And you tell me that that's good work. Go. Right. She nearly outperformed. She has got 3 children. Young children, she smashed her work. Not a day off, not a day sick, not a day anything. Just absolutely. And you know what? A couple of times what she needed was a coffee in the evening and to be able to just verbal vomit. And we did it. And she is phenomenal, right? And one of the women that works for me, 5 children, right? Her and a partner together are 5 children. Wow. And she needed to be able to just do what she needed to do when she needed to do it. Do it. And the same for the dads and the co-parents in my team. Crack on. And actually, if you need to cancel a call with me, I don't really believe in hierarchy. If your kids need something and you need to cancel the call, cancel it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Cancel it. Unless it's like on death's door, someone's going to die. Cancel it. Be human first. And do you know what? We're going to get to the end of this year. We're going to smash some wicked workout and we're all going to feel like whole humans. That's success.
Crystal, I could talk to you for hours.
I know. And I'm going to let you have your Sunday back because otherwise we will talk for hours.
I just wish we were in a bar or something with a pint. And I just,
that's my favourite.
All we need is one bottle of wine and then we'd be off. Like,
I could
talk about this with you for hours. I love the way you talk about it. I love the way you work and you do. What infuriates me about this sometimes is we talk about it with so many people just don't do it because it's hard to do and I understand that. But like, let's just do it. You know what I mean? Like, so that example is such a good example. Like, I acknowledge that someone will come to me as a safety guy and be like, well, I saw that they emailed me at midnight. So I jumped on them and said, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. Are you okay? Hang on a minute. You want to be asking them why they feel like they need to do that. Is it because they've got too much work? In which case we can help them with that if they want to work 9 to 5. Or is it actually because 9 to 5, they're not working. And that's just how they their life works. We need to have that conversation. We're not trying to mold this person into this old-fashioned 9-to-5 work where, like, we measure your performance on how the time you clock in and the time you clock out. And actually, let's just start measuring your performance on, one, are you okay? And two, the work you're delivering is what we jointly, collaboratively have agreed that you can do and deliver successfully.
That's right.
Definitely. Right, Chris, I'm going to let you go. If people want to contact yourself or just have a chat with you, is LinkedIn the best place to kind of connect with you?
Absolutely, mate, yeah.
Thought so. Cool. I'll drop your, as long as you're right with it, I'll drop your LinkedIn in the connections below or the description below.
Definitely do.
Grand. Chris, well, thank you very much for your time, especially on a Sunday. It's been amazing to talk to you.
Been a pleasure. See you later.
Okay, peeps, I hope you enjoyed that conversation between me and Crystal, all about kind of diversity and understanding our experiences and our challenges throughout it. Diversity is a beast of many faces, so to speak. And we need to increase awareness around this. We need to understand each other's challenges, and we need to be empathetic to each other's challenges. And through raising awareness, we need to have sensitive conversations, and we need to learn, and we need to work out how we talk about this stuff. So please share this with somebody that you think needs to hear this. But please remember that in doing this, we may say something, we may use a word, we may have a conversation that goes down a bit of a route that we're like, oh, well, we're all still learning here. We're all still working at how we talk about this stuff, how we have these conversations. So please bear that in mind. If you need to feedback, then please do. We welcome it, and it's only going to help us improve. But ultimately, remember, we're trying to do a good thing here. So thank you very much, Crystal, for coming on. And thank you for having such an open and honest conversation with me. If you enjoyed that, please leave, rate and review, share it with someone. Whatever you can do to help raise awareness will be greatly appreciated. Don't forget to check out Paradigm Human Performance, our sponsor, and more specifically their HC subscription service if you're an SME. And just for generally for everyone, the Learning Organization webinar is a fantastic source of information. If you're a health, safety or risk professional, don't forget to check out Project Miletium, the mastermind community. You can contact me or Colin, we'll get you on a call completely free of charge so you can try it before you buy it. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.